Every day, families with critically ill children face the unthinkable, being far from home while their child receives life-saving medical care. Ronald McDonald House Charities Bay Area steps in to ease this burden, providing no-cost housing, free meals, and comprehensive support services to families whose children are being treated at the Bay Area's leading children's hospitals, including Lucile Packard Children's Hospital Stanford and UCSF Benioff Children's Hospitals in San Francisco and Oakland. But we can't do it alone. Your support, through donations or volunteering, helps families stay close to each other and the expert care they need. Visit rmhcbayarea.org to learn how you can make a lasting impact.
Hey there, welcome to another edition of The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. I hope everyone is making it through these winter blah months. Happy February to you all. Today, I am so happy to shine a light on a true hockey game changer. This is Bain Pettinger. Professionally, Bain is a high-powered agent. He spent 4+ years cutting his teeth with CAA before launching his own agency, Apollo Athletics, representing players like Jamie Benn and Tyson Barrie. Before that, Bain spent many years as a manager with Hockey Canada, working with young players like Morgan Riley, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby. In 2020, Bain decided he could no longer hide who he was from his professional clients and friends. He came out as gay. And much to Bain's relief, the reaction was nothing but support and love. And now Bain uses his voice and his platform to advocate for the LGBTQ plus community. He is the co-founder of the queer-led nonprofit, The Alphabet Collective. Here's my conversation with Bain.
All right, Bain. So before we kind of get to, you know, the story of Bain now, I want to know the Bain of before. Let's start right from the beginning. You're from Victoria, British Columbia. Let's take it from there.
Yeah, I'm a West Coast kid. Grew up in Victoria, family of four. I'm the youngest, oldest sister, and then two brothers that played hockey before me. My brother Matt played in the National Hockey League for 8 odd years, and then Europe. So we're 7 years apart. So he was always my idol growing up. You know, I remember the draft. I remember, you know, going to his junior games, you know, going to his first NHL game in Tampa. So I always knew I wanted to be in hockey. I realized at the very young age that I didn't have the skill on the ice to pursue my dreams. So I knew that I'd be better served off the ice. And that's where at 18, I left playing junior B hockey and went to Southern Alberta Institute of Technology in Calgary.
Yep.
And started working part-time at Hockey Canada. I was a finance intern. I think I knew nothing about finance, but it got me in the door. And I was, you know, mix and mingling with all the national teams folk, the marketing, you know, women's hockey, you know, sponsorship, all of that, and really got my foot in the door there and worked full-time at Hockey Canada in the day and shifted my university education to night classes so that I could work full-time. So I was going, you know, 8 to 5 at Hockey Canada and then 6 to 9 at a night course, trying to obviously finish my education up. That led to, you know, a player development job once I graduated university, and then into the men's national teams where I was for almost 8 years. And, you know, I'm a proud Hockey Canada alumni. I traveled the world with Team Canada, got to know some of the game's best in Steve Yzerman, Doug Armstrong, John Cooper from the staff side, you know, and then from the player side, obviously speaks for itself. You know, when you go to U18s and there's a double underage named Connor McDavid there with a Justin Bieber haircut. And then, you know, when you leave the tournament and, or you leave your post at Hockey Canada and he's the captain of the men's national team, you know, 8 years later, it's pretty special. You know, there's some events that really stick out. I think 2015 World Juniors in Toronto here, having that, I've never heard that Leafs rink as loud as it was when we won. And you look back at some of the rosters that we had, you know, that decor alone was Nurse, Morrissey and Theodore. Right.
Wow.
And then you look at a Four Nations roster now, you know, 11 years later, and there's a lot of those same guys, you know, right. Whether it's Connor or, you know, them. So it was awesome. Got to go to a couple Olympic games. And like I said, that was my education. You know, a lot of people go to a Brock, you know, university sports school or sport management or get an MBA or a law degree. Mine was traveling the world in almost a real life internship. Putting out fires, whether it was in Russia with lost passports or, you know, going to Korea four times in 2018 during the Olympic year for site visits and and then the actual Olympic games with non-professional, you know, non-NHL players, I should say. So had lots thrown at me on how to troubleshoot in foreign countries. So really, you know, from made that switch from managing teams to managing players.
Right.
And made the switch to join CAA in right before COVID hit. Moved from Calgary to Toronto, and I was with them for 4.5 years. Learned a lot there from Pat Brisson and JP Barry and the likes of that crew. And then about a year and a half ago, started my own agency, Apollo Athletics. And we have about 22 clients right now, from 14 years old to Jamie Benn in the National Hockey League. So starting, you know, my own company in the last year and a half, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit, I love it. You definitely miss the constant paycheck, but you know, you fight for what you get. And I see, you know, that the future is very bright for how, you know, we're trying to change things at Apollo, and our tagline is modern athlete management. I think we need to, you know, focus more on these players with mental health and communication and you know, all of those little things that I think differentiate us from the classic bigger agencies.
Okay. So let's back up a little bit, because I mean, first of all, I know you are a rugby player. Did you ever have an idea that that might take you somewhere, or you always had your sights set on, okay, like I'm going to be in the hockey world in some capacity?
Yeah, I grew up obviously on the West Coast there, where hockey was big, but outdoor sports, soccer, rugby were bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obviously a year-round climate. So when I showed up to grade eight at the size that I'm at, 6'4", I didn't really have an option to not play rugby. I was told, you're going to play, and... And my homeroom teacher was also the phys ed teacher, who was the national rugby team coach. So I love the sport. I think it's great camaraderie. I think it's awesome. It's very similar to hockey. It's all pulling the same rope. It's all, you know, team first. So yeah, I did play a bit for Team BC, and then I got the opportunity to play for Rugby Canada in Dubai, of all places, for a Junior World Cup. So got to wear the maple leaf on that side. And I ran into some injury issues. I lived in Wales for a year playing semi-pro, and hockey was always drawing me back, right? Hockey was always the one that I reverted back to, up late nights watching games, you know, whether it was media members or agents that I saw ahead of me or players or friends that were playing. I was always wanted to be in hockey. I wasn't sure what avenue it was going to be, but I think that's the best part about our game, is that there is so many options. You can be a media member, you can be a referee, you can be an agent, you can be a manager, you can be a trainer. Everyone's dream is to be a player, but there's only 700 odd jobs in the NHL, right? Think about how many are out there being a beat reporter for the San Jose Sharks, or being, you know, a statistician for the Toronto Maple Leafs, or an equipment manager. So that's what I always encourage people that I talk to, is that it doesn't have to be, I need to be an NHL player, or I haven't quote unquote made it in hockey. You know, I think there's a lot of good people out there around that, you know, aren't just players. I think there's a lot of opportunities. So I always say, you know, it's cliche, my dad says it, but hockey's a contact sport on and off the ice. You know, I think that's very important to, you know, never burn a bridge, treat people the way you want to be treated, all these cliche things, but you never know who you're going to run into, what GM is going to be now with the national team, what media member may have a job here, and then next week they're on NHL Network. And I think in the hockey world, reputation's a huge thing. Totally. I really think that, you know, we pride ourselves, especially on agents, because a lot of us do the same thing, right? Like, let's be honest, a lot of us represent players, and the contracts will set themselves with the comps. It's what you do in between, I think, that separates, you know, agencies, how you treat people, how you, you know, the intangibles. And I think that's really something that, you know, I try to focus on with our agency and our players, is creating character players and family members, for that sense, because part of our thing at Apollo is educating parents as well. We always focus on the players, but we leave the parents out to dry, I think. And I strongly believe that if we can educate the parents, and that message is getting to everyone in the group on the car ride home from the rink, you know, and it's not, well, what did Bain tell you? If we have everyone on board, the moms, the dads, the uncles, who's ever in, the siblings, to understand, you know, when you see a draft ranking, that isn't the actual draft. You know, when you see a bad Twitter thing, like that doesn't matter, right? Because everyone, no matter how much you think people know and will not pay attention to online rumors or rankings or this or that, it's a constant re-education. You know, it feels sometimes like I'm in grade four when I'm reteaching the curriculum about a draft year, right? Don't read the message boards. The rankings don't matter. You know, just because some scout said that they liked you doesn't mean you're a first round pick. And just little things like that, that, you know, with the education piece that we really try to harp home to set expectations, because if the bar is too high, you can only fall. And I think it's important that we have, you know, I think the role of an agent is to be real as well and to be honest.
Right.
And sometimes those are going to be tough conversations if you're not playing well, or if you're in the dumps or you're in a slump, right? We will always have our clients back, but there's also some accountability. If the player's, you know, messing around off the ice or on the ice, the on ice play isn't up to standard, then I think, you know, that's an agent's role, is to help with that and work with the teams, right? We all want, I think everyone thinks that there's this conflict between teams and agent. I don't see it that way. I think we can come to a, you know, it doesn't have to be a win-lose in a negotiation. It can be a win-win and really have, you know, what's best for the player in mind, you know, whether it's in contract negotiation, whether it's in ice time, whether it's in, you know, other areas. But I really think that, you know, the team and the agent can work together, because if the player is not doing well, the team's not happy. If the player is not doing well, the agent's not happy. If the player is not doing well, the player's not happy. So,
it's not going to go well.
We can all pull the same rope, and it can be a win-win where everyone's happy, and it doesn't have to be a win-lose. And I think that's important, because there's going to be another contract negotiation. There's going to be another player that goes through that system with that management group, and people in the hockey world have short memories, and the gotcha moments, you know, or burning people doesn't, you know, pulling a fast one doesn't, I don't think it resonates well and leaves a lasting impact on future relationships.
Well, like you said, it is a small business. You know, everybody knows everybody, and you never know who's going to end up somewhere down the road. So yes, you gotta do things right. I want to also go back to you as an 18-year-old with Hockey Canada, because how did that happen? Did you just go knock on their door and say, like, hey, I want to help? Like, that seems like an unbelievable opportunity, but you would have had to really, like, you know, grab that for yourself.
Yeah. So they hire internships every summer. A lot of, I don't know if they still do. I haven't been there for 7 years now, but they would hire interns every summer. And I was, you know, really focused on getting there. You know, with my brother playing, I obviously had a few contacts there, again, going back to who, you know, I had a few ins of people that I knew there. And really wasn't taking no for an answer. Right. And as I said, you know, it's classic. It'll be a chapter in the book, but, you know, can you do finance? I said, sure. You know, and right. I think there's still, you know, tax receipts that are in error from me, but, you know, it was something that I just knew to climb the stepladder. And there was points where I was like, what am I doing here? You know, I've got a university degree and I'm out, you know, testing, you know, minor hockey drills to go across Canada. So I'm on the ice at 10 a.m. teaching novice players how to do crossovers to see if that should be implemented in the next Hockey Canada plan. I remember a few phone calls from my parents saying, what are we doing here? You have a university degree and you're pretty much an on-ice instructor. Like, let's get the world going here. You know, I had older siblings that were already in the working world successful. And I just said to them, I want to stick to my dream of being in hockey here. You know, I think I'm networking. I'm looking at the long-term plan. And then luckily, you know, a job came up in national teams, and I was fortunate enough to get that. And, you know, my first World Juniors was 2012 in Edmonton, Calgary. And then, you know, my last one was 2018 in Victoria, in my hometown. Wow. So it was kind of, you know, that's serendipitous perfect. That we had the staff over to my brother's house for, you know, I knew it was going to be my last World Juniors. I had already communicated that with Hockey Canada. So there were some moments where, you know, we're standing in the arena I grew up playing hockey in, and the World Junior team's on the ice. And I was like, whoa, this is really coming full circle for me. And, you know, to have the staff over to my brother's for dinner, you know, those are things that I never thought would happen when I started working at Hockey Canada, but to have that be my kind of swan song event and then move on to CAA was awesome. But again, I love my time at Hockey Canada. You get to mix and mingle with, you know, the best players in the world. Different than a club team, everyone wants to be there. There's no 10 game losing streaks. You know, there's no fear of a coach getting fired if you lose a few. Everyone is pulling in the same direction for a short-term tournament. Not to sound cocky, but Canada's got a very good chance of winning it in most events they go into.
Sure.
So, you know, you I do miss that feeling of, you know, you're in the locker room an hour before the game and guys are getting taped up and you're having a coffee with the trainers and we're playing Sweden and, you know, a couple of players are in the hallway getting ready and you hear the national anthems. And I do, that's the one thing I miss on the agency side is that team side, right? Where you show up to the rink, that, that camaraderie, someone scores a goal and you're in the intermission and you're going into overtime. And, you know, although you're not playing, you feel a part of it. You know, as an agent, we go and sit up in the press box and watch the game and hopefully your guys do well, but you don't really have that draw for a team. Mm-hmm. And pulling the common rope. So that's one thing that I definitely do miss is the team side of things, right? Yeah. Of having that, that, that gold medal day feeling, I say, where, you know, you're about to play the US on home soil or Russia back when they were in the tournaments. And, you know, I think back to some of those, whether it was World Cup of Hockey here with Team Canada, you know, with some of the best, you know, world championships in Russia to Switzerland to, I've got more memories than, you know, that are just so awesome, you know, of these people and the families that whether it's a Spangler Cup, you know, if no one's ever been to a Spangler Cup, I think it's the best tournament in hockey. It's in the middle of the Swiss Alps, beautiful sleigh rides to the rink. Like it is fantasy. And then you get to go watch hockey in a 100-year-old building. And
well, we know how much Joe Thornton loves that tournament.
Oh, it is. Jumbo. I think he married I think his wife is from Davos.
Yeah, Tobias Swiss. Yeah.
Yeah. And he still has a residence over there. So good for Joe. He discovered it and stuck with it. So no, it's special for sure.
So Bane, I mean, let's get to your personal story because, you know, you've got this super high powered hockey trajectory now. When did you know you were gay?
I always had inklings when I was younger. My mom will say she knew from, you know, when I was a youth. She likes to claim credit for that, but gave me my time. For me, it was, I was always go, go, go. I was always on to the next World Juniors, on to the next World Championship. I'm an outgoing guy. I'm pretty sociable. I was always putting it on the back burner. I was always like, well, no, I got to get ready for Four Nations or a World Championship. I'm not going to dissect that, you know, and I've got another party to attend to, or I've got another, you know, there's always pushing it back. So for me, really COVID is when, you know, the world stopped and so did, you know, my kind of social calendar, but also my work. Right. So I went back to Victoria. I thought it was going to be for 2 weeks. And ended up there for 6 months. And that's where some, you know, everyone's kind of hunkered down and really pondering or playing, you know, you're just killing time. You're trying to, you know, everyone's kind of in a mental reset. So that's where I really had some tough conversations with, you know, I was somewhat out to my family and friends, but not, I never wanted to combine my, you know, quote unquote, high profile work job in a hyper masculine hockey world with my, you know, sexual orientation. I saw the two as separate, that they could coexist. And then, you know, you're going to weddings, you're going to birthdays, everyone starts to get a partner and get, you know, my friends start to have kids. And there comes a realization of, okay, where am I at? Right? Where's Bane at? Because as an agent, you're so used to putting out other people's fires, right? You get a phone call and it's, you know, what can I help with? An injury happened, a trade needs to happen, a contract's due. You're always, okay, you analyze and then you come up with a solution for your players. That's what an agent does. So that's always outgoing, but there was never the incoming, okay, how's Bane doing?
Right.
How am I doing? And that didn't happen until COVID when the phone stopped ringing. And I had some honest conversations with my family and friends in Victoria. And, you know, I said, I think I'm ready to be public with this and combine my professional world that's going so well with my, you know, my personal side, which I was struggling with, right? Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I don't want to say substance abusing, but I was having an extra drink to say it's all good. I was masking it. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, not, I don't want to say self-harming, but I wasn't myself. I wasn't my lovely self. I was getting angry. I was getting short with people. And it took a lot of, you know, therapy. It took a lot of self-reflection, a lot of honest chats, and a lot of support, a lot of just, it's going to be okay. You know, whether it's Tyson Berry or whether it's Connor McDavid, you know, the guys that I floated it by saying, how do you think the hockey world's going to react to this? Right. A Morgan Riley over a glass of wine. Hey guys, I'm thinking about doing this. And they're like, that's awesome. That'll be great. What are you worried about? Because when you're on the other side of coming out, you think the worst possible is going to happen.
Right.
I thought I would be fired. I thought I would be, you know, tarred and feathered, I thought that I would be exiled from the game. I said, there's no way that I can be gay and successful in hockey. And I don't know why. I and then you come out the other side and you come out and you see the support and love and respect. And it's, I'm like, why did I wait so long?
Right. But right? I mean, there is that disconnect because, you know, these guys you talk about, Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, all the support you have, Tyson Barry. But, you know, we know that hockey can be a difficult space where people are othered, and certainly a homophobic space. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I understand your hesitation. So mm-hmm. Where is the disconnect? Why aren't kids looking at Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby and their acceptance and going like, hey, man, it's all right.
I don't think that's what gets the headline. You know, right. When we look at the Pride jersey ban, right, several years ago, there's 700 odd players in the NHL. Two or three spoke up against it.
Right.
That's less than 1%. You know, when else would we ever report on a 0.8% or whatever it is?
Right.
If we look at it the other way, glass half full, 99% are good. Right. And I think, but that doesn't draw the headlines. You know, the text that I got from Connor McDavid or from Brian McDavid, his dad, saying, hey, we support you, we love you, this is awesome. That's not Twitter clickbait. That's a personal message. It's mm-hmm. it's that, you know, a couple players decide to speak up against it. And you know what? I think, but it goes to show the power of allyship, you know, mm-hmm. especially with the Pride tape stuff. I know that it's just tape and I know that it can be ridiculous, but if players don't get microphones in their face and speak up and say, no, I've got family members and community members, this is an outrageous rule, you can't tell me what to put on my tape, then that doesn't get reversed.
Right.
Right. If people stay silent, you're okay with it. You know, I think that's a perfect example of allyship is the Pride tape ban. They stick microphones in a couple of people's voices, a couple, you know, players' faces, and they get some pretty candid responses. The pressure caves that, no, this isn't okay. Right. And I think people assume that silence means they're okay with it. And I think you could see the same thing with allyship. You know, some of the messages I got, they're personal messages though, you know? So when I see the headlines of, oh, NHL's homophobic, it's like, well, no, there's, you know, there's a lot of there. I think that's a society thing. I think, mm-hmm. yeah, you can put it on the NHL, but I also do think that the good doesn't get highlighted enough. And, right. and I think that the, you know, not everyone's comfortable to speak on it because they haven't walked in those shoes. Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that I do believe that there's more good than bad in our game. I think it's like society. There's going to be outliers on either side. And believe me, I'm not trying to convince everyone or say, hey, look at me. I'm just, you know, and that's what we're trying to do with Alphabet Sports Collective is trying to, you know, create those spaces for people to feel welcome so that they don't feel like I did, that they have to choose between being out and openly gay and working in hockey. Because that's what, before COVID happened, that's what was going through my mind was, Right. Okay, if I come out, I've got to quit hockey. Right. And it's the exact opposite. And I think it's just people like myself, like Brock, like, you know, Dre, like Luke, living their truth and, mm-hmm. and being open and honest about it. So that if someone's listening to this pod, they can say, yeah, I can be myself and work in sports. I don't have to have those fears because mm-hmm. someone's done that ahead of me. Someone's trailblazed that, you know, that's how I know Brock McGillis. That's how Alphabet came about. I Googled gay hockey players and Brock McGillis popped up right. and I texted him. We chatted for an hour and I gave him my story and I said, I'm thinking about coming out. Right. 6 months later, I get a call from Jerry Johansson. He said, hey, have you got a player in the Western Hockey League? We saw your story with Pierre LeBrun and your courage. Can you talk to Luke Prokop? He wants to come out. So with that, you see, you know, people before you, it's a little, you know, pat on the back saying, I can do this. Right. Why can't this be me? Why do I have to choose between a game I love and you know, not being accepted? And I think, you know, when I look back, it was probably 75% me, 25% outside pressure, mm-hmm. right, of why I didn't come out. I was always fearful. I was always, because it's not like you walk into a room and say, hey, what do you think about this? Like, I remember being so nervous to tell players that I worked for or even friends in the game that, hey, I'm thinking about this. Like, I thought it would be a storm out. We're done as friends. Stay away from me. Like, it was the most loving, accepting, you know, encouraging thing. And every conversation I had, I gained more courage. Mm-hmm. Every time I said the words, I'm gay, I was like, okay. People were like, and you look at them, there's that half second pause. You're like, great. Why does that matter? Right. So I think it's more internal, honestly. And so that's why we're trying to create, you know, with Alphabet there that we can get into, is creating that space, you know, for thriving queer, trans, you know, communities in hockey to say, come on, if you're smart and you know the game, it doesn't matter your sexual orientation. Let's not push people away from our game. Let's bring them in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big thing with us, is, you know, focusing on the queer community, focusing on, you know, those people that want to feel empowered to say that it is okay, you know, create community and get them in. You know, we need representation on boards, right? We need to have a queer member on the Hockey Canada board. We need to have a queer member on USA Hockey board to have that perspective of, you know, language and slurs and viewpoints. And I think that's very important to normalize it and humanize it so that it's not, you know, just a hush hush, you know, Hockey Canada report at the end of the year, or Ontario Hockey Federation, of how many gay slurs were out there. It's like, okay, but what are we doing to be in front of that and proactively, you know, humanize that so that it's not an issue 10 years from now? I hope that this isn't, you know, everyone's waiting for the first NHL gay player, but then they're going to be put on a pedestal, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a catch-22 in that way, where you want, you know, you want to have the exposure and normalize, but also people want some privacy, right? And I think that's important.
How far away do you think we are from having an out NHL player? I mean, Luke Prokop plays for the Milwaukee Admirals. But yeah, no, so far, no out NHLer. Think we're close?
Yeah, I don't think there's a coincidence when, you know, you look at the other sports, NFL, NBA, players come out after they retire, right? Because they're not in that spotlight. They don't have the media mics in their face. They don't have to be that poster person, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we're strictly talking, you know, we're only talking about men's hockey here, whereas women's hockey, it's a completely different culture.
Totally.
You know, Laura Stacey and Marie-Philippe Poulin, you know, awesome. Celebrate their wedding. It's on Instagram. It looked beautiful. Family and friends. Like, and I looked there and I'm like, how is that fully good? And then here we're playing the same sport, right? And those are things that I ask myself, because the women's game is so far ahead of the men's game in terms of, you know, acceptance, celebration, whatever, you know. And I would like to dive into that more with some, you know, members of that league, just to see how... what are we missing here? Is it leadership? Is it acceptance? Is it a bro culture? What is it? Because I think the women's game is the shining light for us on acceptance, where you have the best player arguably in the world, you know, and it looked like an unbelievable wedding. And I was just sad I wasn't invited.
I was sad I wasn't there too.
Yeah, no, you and I, the letters in the mail to Laura and Marie-Philippe.
I mean, I do think that's sort of the part of the bedrock of women's hockey has always been, you know, lesbian and queer culture.
Yeah.
But yes, there's much to be learned from that for sure.
Yeah.
But this is all part of the work that you and the Alphabet Collective aim to do. So let's talk about that and you know, how it started and really what the aim is and where you hope to be.
Yeah, really how it started was, you know, through Brock, you know, myself, Luke, you know, some of our great board members. We said, let's create a space, you know, where, you know, because a lot of organizations face externally and they'll wave a pride flag and say everything's okay, right? We'll go to one hockey game any year and everyone else have a rainbow jersey, which we aren't even allowed anymore. Right. But, you know, we'll go and say, yay, we're celebrating. But that doesn't move the needle, I don't think. I think we need to get people feeling good. I think we need to get people that are in the community, you know, the queer and trans community, feeling like they belong in the game, right? So with Alphabet Sports Collective, you know, we named it sports, not just hockey, because we plan to expand to other sports eventually. We're going to start in the hockey space. You know, it's really about, the first step is creating membership, you know, saying, hey, join, come, we'll have a speaker series, we'll, you know, have our ambassadors, you know, we'll like-minded people that are in the same headspace, that are afraid that the big bad hockey world won't welcome them. I think there's a big thing in having that membership, so you don't feel alone, right? And you have, you know, board members that are forward-facing public figures that are in, you know, successful hockey positions. Mm-hmm. So first step is creating that membership, opening it up, which we're going to do soon here, and having people join that don't feel they feel welcome in the game or unsure. Or, hey, I'm, you know, not out of the closet yet. How do I manage this? How did you do it? You know, not to say that we're the were the poster, you know, kids for it. But once you've been through something and you have that experience, my hindsight's 20/20. I can, you know, if someone's on the verge of coming out and they have these fears, I can say, well, I had those same things, mm-hmm. right? And I had those same, you know, reservations about what people would say or what people would think or what, you know, your mind spins. And I've been there, and it's a really dark, not fun place. But, you know, so first thing is membership, and then it's meetups, it's watch parties. It's not just, hey, once a year, let's have, you know, a pride night. It's let's get together and watch a game or go to a pub, or let's, you know, do a speaker series. Let's have, you know, a media member from Ambassadors, or let's meet in Toronto and have yourself or Pierre LeBrun or, you know, Morgan Riley come out and let's do a meetup and come up with best ideas and share stories and really best practices. And, you know, and then the next thing is mentorship, you know, having someone to help, you know, hold your hand a bit through it. Having, mm-hmm. you know, if they are struggling, I think that mentorship is huge. I think if you can have a role model ahead of you, whether it's a media member, a player, a, you know, a board member of ours, myself, Luke, whatever, I think having that person that you can bounce ideas off, that can help, you know, not just, and it's not just, hey, we're asking people to come out. It's those that were either driven away from the game. The amount of people that I talk right. to that, well, I'm gay. I don't feel welcome there. So I'm going to go play over here. You know, there's a reason there's a Toronto Gay Hockey League. And it's not just all because they were obviously felt they got pushed out, right? And not welcome. And they want a safe space. So it's let's work with those groups. What drives you away from the game? What, you know, how does this affect you? You know, and we're open with other organizations too. We're not, you know, we want to collaborate. We're not about just, hey, it's our way or the highway. You know, I know obviously You Can Play is out there. There's other, you know, Black Girl Hockey Club. There's other, you know, networks that are trying to do the same space. And at the end of the day, we're all trying to make hockey a better space. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think the fighting or adversaries, you know, going head to head, I don't think that's the way to do it. I don't think it's we're better than them because we know more. It's we're all learning, adapting, you know, things come up, society changes, legislation changes. You know, there's certain things that are going on in the world right now that even push people more down and marginalized. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're really trying to focus on the community and feel good. And then the last part of ours is mobilization. We want to bring people in, get them mentored, get them feeling good about themselves, and then mobilize. Let's get out there, go get a job in sports media, you know, and be a queer member and recruit back. You know, let's have people come back through, you know, almost the program, you know, of feeling good and membership. And then let's get on boards. Let's be, you know, advisor councils for whether it's the USHL, the Ontario Hockey League. Let's have that voice and that presence to mobilize and say, you know what, we can make a difference in this sport and slowly chip away. Because as I said before, the power of allyship with that pride tape was when finally people spoke up and yeah. Marty Walsh from the NHLPA had to get involved. And it wasn't the 1% that said, you know, this is wrong that spoke up. It was the 99% that said, no, we're good with this. And this is actually the true view of the players. And I think, you know, with leadership, you know, with teams on board, I think we create that community that is thriving, and then it's a non-issue. But we have to keep fighting the fights, right? And I'm not up here on my soapbox, and I hope no one listening thinks that. I just think it's common sense that, you know, you can wear a pride jersey for a warm-up and then it gets sold for $30,000 at an auction, and that money goes to therapy for a queer youth that doesn't think he's involved in the game.
Right.
Like it's that simple. It's not politics. It's not right and wrong. It's awareness for that queer fan that is a fan of Morgan Riley that bids on that jersey after, or, you know, we get it at ASC, and that money goes directly to mental health for at-risk youth, for a kid that DM'd me the day before that plays in Med Hat that is afraid to tell his team that he's gay and he's going to quit or self-harm.
Right.
That's as simple as it is. There's no politics. There's no, it's the reach out that myself, Brock, Luke get daily from kids that are in the game, male and female, that are afraid to live their truth and think they have to decide between being gay and being a great hockey person. Right. And you don't have to, you can be both. And I think that's what we're trying to do, you know, and that's why we fight for pride nights. And that's why pride jersey, sorry, and the tape, and that's why we keep fighting, because we keep getting these messages from at-risk youth saying, hey, I was going to tell my coach, and then you know, the sad part is we empower them to tell their coach, and the coach says, you're going to get kicked off the team if you tell your team, because there's still some ignorant people out there. There's still, everyone thinks, oh, it's all good, you got your pride tape back. No, look in some messages, look on the deep dive. There's still at-risk youth and adults that are struggling to feel welcome in our game because of their sexual orientation. And I personally think that's a joke, and I'm on the other side of that, but it's easy for me to say now in hindsight 2020, but I was once there where I thought it was, you have to pick and choose. But you know, it's shutting down that bigotry. It's trying not to read the headlines. You know, if you were a queer youth in the last 2 years, you read NHL's homophobic, right? You're not welcome here. Players speak out against this, but it's getting to the, through our membership and meetups, that's not the real story being told, mm-hmm. right? That's a couple players that were through religion or country, whatever their reasoning is. And I fully respect it. We're not asking to change people, but let's not let that be the headline. Let's have it be that, you know, Sidney Crosby sent me his pride jersey and it hangs on my wall proudly because he's a big advocate in the space, but he doesn't, you know, that doesn't get the clickbait. And you know, and the amount of text that I got when that pride stuff happened from players saying, hey, thinking about you today. And I didn't even really think about it. I was like, oh yeah, you know, but it's just one of those where it shows the power of athletes using their brand to speak up. And they don't realize, I work with athletes all the time, they don't realize that the brand power and the advocacy that they can have. Hockey players are very limited in that they don't think that their voice matters, you know, and media members even for that. And I think, as I said to a few people when that pride tape ban happened, a couple big players in the league, I said, you say what you want, but know that your words, even the fact that you're speaking up, is going to be make a difference, because silence is acceptance, I think.
I agree.
Right. If you sit back and you see something happen on the street and you're like, oh, well, that wasn't me, I didn't, but I wasn't, you're like, no, you can be a bystander and still be guilty. Right. So I think we're starting to see players stand up. We're starting to see executives, and just, you know, we're not flying the flag, like I said, on the soapbox. We're just saying what's right and wrong. It's absolutely ridiculous to ban tape. Like, what, you know, I'm as reasonable as there is, and it's actually a laughable matter, like that's a distraction. It's like, you know, and then you see Travis Dermott go out and just do it anyways, you know, you see
all the time, by
yeah,
the way.
I think that, you know, players awesome. Are asking for boxes. It's just they're more rebellious and more speaking out of the cliche answers and more wanting to educate themselves and grow their brand to say, hey, like, I don't need to follow the norm of the standard hockey player that wears a backwards hat, a t-shirt, all the same things, all the same cliches in an interview. I can be different and have my views, and, you know, and it's okay and accepted and celebrated.
I'm going to leave you with this question. I know you were very inspired by Brendan Burke's story. That's Brian Burke's son who came out as gay and tragically died in a car accident. But I know that his story, you know, you really took that to heart and wanted to honor his memory.
Yeah, Brendan, I never had the chance to meet him, but I remember, you know, we talk about inspiration. I remember James Duthie doing the interview, because Brendan and I would have been about the same age, and watching that, you know, and Brian Burke being, hey, you know what, my son will work in the National Hockey League, and just the inspiration. I remember sitting and watching TV. I think it was like an intermission of a game or a playoff game. And it was, you know, we have an announcement to make. And I saw Brendan up there, and he's around my age. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm gay and this. And then Ryan backs it up. And I remember sitting there being like, holy, you know, that's unbelievable that he has the courage to do that. I said, that kid's my age, you know, and I want to work in hockey and I'm queer. So like, how do I, you know, what it was very inspiring for me, you know, obviously tragic that, you know, a little bit after that, he lost his life, but definitely a huge inspiration. You know, Brock knew him a bit, but, you know, for the whole Burke family, it's something that sparked for me, at least, to see someone on TV speaking their truth that looked like me. That, and then you have the big brash Brian Burke back him up, and it's, you know, TSN puts it on there, and it was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
It was way ahead of its time. And, you know, it was something that sparked something in me that says, hey, I can do this too. Right. And I, that's what we hope to do. that's what we're hoping to do, is reach out. You know, we're not inaccessible. I'm in the rinks every day. I'm in Toronto here at Chesswood, Westwood, Scotia Pond. I coach in the GTHL. I have clients that are all over. I'm in at the Guelph Storm game tonight. Feel free to reach out. You don't need to live in this shadow and feel shame, you know? And I think the more that we can advocate, the more welcoming we can make our game, I think just makes our game better. And I love hockey. I'm passionate about it. I want to work in it forever, but we also need to let our guard down a bit, and that it's not just, you know, pucks deep and, you know, get out there and, you know, suck it up. It's, we are humans that play a game and work in a game, and it's okay to celebrate our differences and be different, you know? And I think that's the biggest part that we're trying to do with Alphabet. I'm trying to do personally is just, you know, celebrate differences, embrace those that are different. And you know what? Hockey's a fantastic game. I love the game of hockey. I wouldn't be here without it. You wouldn't be here without it. There's a million people that wouldn't be here without it. Players included, fans, right? There's fans that can't wait for a Saturday night Leafs game because that's the highlight of their week. They grind all week. So let's just make our game a little better for our kids, for our people around us, for those in the queer and trans community. And let's just accept and celebrate all. And, you know, and I think that's how we're going to get to a better place, both for our game, but in society as well.
Bain, thank you for your voice and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tara.
A huge thanks to Bain for taking time out of his very, very busy schedule. Thanks to you for listening, and really do want to encourage you to learn more about what the Alphabet Sports Collective is doing. And I think lots of announcements really to come in the coming months. By the way, we didn't mention this in the podcast, but I'm an ambassador too, and very proudly so. AlphabetSportsCollective.com is how you find them. And of course, do anything and everything that you can do to make people feel welcome in every space. But for our purposes here today, make them feel welcome in hockey, would you? I will be back with you in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, keep your sticks on the ice. Keep your fins above water.